This is a live educational teletalk that is being recorded. The podcast is provided by Terry O'Hara, professional animal communicator, and it is the property of AnimalWise, LLC. Please do not duplicate, sell, or forward this recording. If you have any questions or comments regarding the content of this talk or animal communication, they can be directed to Terry's website at www.animalwise.com. That's www.animalwise.com. Enjoy the talk. I think pretty much all of you are seasoned teletalk people at this time, except for our guest speaker. But I always like to say why I do the teleclasses. And mostly it's a great way to gain wisdom from experts, such as our wonderful guest speaker today, and of course always from the animals, and keep you learning from those that we love, our special loved ones, meaning our animal friends that have so much wisdom for us. Obviously, the teleclasses are convenient, easy, and hopefully fun. That's always my goal. And today we're fortunate to have a wonderful person who not only is a veterinarian and has had her own personal journey in learning a little bit more about nutrition based on experience, which is what all of us have done. Sometimes we don't learn it until we really need to. Sometimes we learn it because we're hearing about it. So she's had her own learning experience she's going to share a little bit about. So Holly Foster is with us today, and some of you have met her because Holly's also been a student of mine for quite a while and is quite good at animal communication as well. So we have a talented guest speaker, and Holly, I would like you to say a little bit more about yourself in a moment. I'm going to go into just why we're doing nutrition. Obviously, you guys probably have all heard the expression, you are what you eat. And, you know, that's kind of been drilled into us humans when we're told to eat a little bit better. And it really is true in many ways because what we're putting in creates who we are, all of our cells, all of our metabolism, everything that we're putting into our bodies, and the same thing with our animals, creates what's going on within the body. And somewhere along the line, we got a little bit confused with what to feed animals, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But it's real important for us to remember that dogs can't pick and choose what their bodies are needing like we can. For example, we may have a craving for salads for a week, and we're just eating tons of salads, and it's what we seem to be wanting, craving, needing. And dogs can't, you know, necessarily walk up to the cupboard and help themselves to some apples. And so because they are being fed by us humans, they are at the mercy of what we give them, which is a big responsibility, actually. And we love them so much, we want them around for as long as possible. And for myself, my own personal journey, I know with my doggies who both passed as seniors last year, Jake was a very large dog and probably, you know, could have been predicted by some vets that he wouldn't live, you know, until maybe 10 or 12 at the most because he was a large guy. But also he was diagnosed with a mass, though we never biopsied it, and was told he was going to die within a month, and he died 2 years later at the age of 14 and had a great life. So I feel that a lot of the quality of Jake's life had to do with what I was feeding him and what I had learned about nutrition and how I was able to offer him meat and good foods in his, and good nutrients in his foods to help him stay as long as he wanted to and as long as he could. And so I know that all of you have the same goal of loved ones, keeping them around as long as they want to and as long as they can, and this offers them a higher quality of life. And Shiloh my Aussie died at 15. And she was a large dog for an Aussie, large size Aussie. So 15, again, was an older age. And I truly attribute their nice longevity to the quality of food that I had learned to give them. And if there's anything I could pass on to all of my clients, it would be improve the quality of the food for your animals. So, and as you know, if you've done consults with me or another animal communicator, a lot of times the animals bring up food. They bring up nutrition. They talk about it. So this is a very important topic today. And once upon a time, dogs ate table scraps, and they were much healthier. They didn't have things like cancer and diabetes and many of the things that they're getting today. But in the 1950s, which Holly taught me yesterday, I didn't realize this, when people got refrigerators, they began to eat their own leftovers. And once they began to eat their own leftovers, there was the need for a pet food industry. And when the pet food industry took off, of course, they wanted to put the cheapest possible ingredients in for the highest profit. They were not, you know, nutritionists saying, what's the most well-balanced meal we can create for dogs? They were simply putting a bunch of stuff together like corn and grains and a variety of fillers to make it stretch out as far as they could, and they were using the worst of the meats in the meat industry. the scraps, the cancerous, you know, cow full of cancer and butchering it, and they're still doing this today. If you see the word byproducts in the labels, it can be the worst of the worst of the meat industry. So they shifted, animals shifted from getting these wonderful leftovers, because meat is meat, vegetables are vegetables, grains are grains, and there's no such thing as people food. That's probably something the pet food helped us, you know, learn to say, oh, people food, we can't give them people food. Well, food is food. We don't own meat any more than they do, and they need it even more than we do. So fortunately, these days, we have come a long way as consumers of products for animals and have started learning and demanding better quality everything for our animals, including better food. So there is much better prepared food these days than there ever was. And it's very important for you to begin to learn to let go of any concept of, oh, I never give my dog people food, or I just give them, you know, the dry food in their bowl because that's what I was told to do. So today we're about expanding your awareness and letting go of some of the things that you thought might be right, and not feeling guilty, because we all had to learn. I had a kitty once that ended up diabetic, and that's when I got on my new nutrition learning craze. So sometimes we have to learn through tough experiences, and that's okay. So you're here today to learn, and I would like to turn it over to Holly to mention. Holly, what motivated you to learn nutrition?
On my own animals, of course. When I was in vet school, when I grew up, my parents had both grown up on farms, and so the dogs all got kibble, but they got scraps because they had both grown up giving their pets scraps. So growing up, the dogs mainly had dog food, but they also had a certain amount of, rather than call it people food, I call it fresh food. So they got a certain amount of fresh food that came off of the table. Then when I was in vet school, we got, I believe it was a total of 3 hours of small animal nutrition. So dogs and cats together, we got 3 hours, and basically they talked about vitamins, your carbohydrates, fat, protein, calories. Bottom line, basically, is just go with the national brand pet food and you'll be fine. At the end of vet school, I could formulate a complete diet from scratch for a pregnant dairy cow, a lactating dairy cow, a dry dairy cow, a performance horse, a backyard pony, or a beef cow at any age of life before it's slaughtered. And all I knew about pet food was, buy a national brand name. You'll be fine. So it was my first personal dog that wasn't a family dog. I fed a national brand name of dog food. And she was fairly old before I started thinking, I think I'm going to start giving her some little table food and a little what I would call now whole food. And at first she wouldn't even take it because she was so strictly confined to kibble and canned food as a growing dog and even as an adult dog. But I did switch her or add some fresh food in hers. And then the dog that I've got now started out kind of backwards in life. Her mom actually got seriously ill with the litter of puppies, resorbed most of the puppies, and the remaining 3 puppies that survived had facial deformities, and we weren't sure if they were going to have internal organ problems. And I took one of these dogs thinking, well, it'll live as long as it lives. And then she got autoimmune meningitis, or was diagnosed with autoimmune meningitis, when she was about 11 months old. And it was at that point that I thought, you know, I need to quit buying food. I want to really control any foreign proteins going into her, things like dyes and preservatives. And so I started making her food. And it was absolutely terrifying. I just thought, oh, my God, what am I doing? How am I going to do this? I'm going to screw up. And there weren't really good recipes, and I was just kind of playing with it. And about 6 weeks into it, when I was really stressing over it, I thought, Holly, look at how you eat, and you're not dead yet. Relax. It'll be okay. So that was about 6 years ago that I started making their food. And actually, the other dog that I always thought of as really healthy showed considerable improvement on fresh food, which was very interesting. I had been impressed by the health of a few of my clients' animals who were feeding raw diets. And so I kind of started with their recipes that they had kind of passed around in breed clubs and different circles, and kind of melded those together and did a little research on it, and I could not bring myself to feed raw, so started with cooking everything. And then eventually, over about 8 months, cooked it less and less and less and went to raw. The interesting thing is my dogs got to be older. They're now 10 and a half and almost 10. And I just felt like the raw food wasn't right, and I started cooking again. And I recently went to a nutrition seminar for holistic vets put on by a holistic veterinarian, and he basically confirmed my gut feeling. He said, you know, young, healthy dogs, middle-aged, vital dogs that are doing good and are well do great on raw. Dogs that are not so vital and older dogs really do better if the food is cooked some and not fed raw. It's easier for them to digest and process. So that was where I kind of started with it, and then my two have taught me a lot over the past 7 or 8 years, just on how they've done with different diet things.
And I just want to add to that that it's important for all of you who are listening to know that it's okay to feel like you're stumbling and fumbling. Even Holly had to stumble and fumble at the beginning. So as she's going to teach you today, she'd rather see you start with a few things than be overwhelmed and feel like you can't go there. And so that's the purpose of today, is to just give you some guidance of, well, where could I start? Or what am I already doing that's good, and what could I do to enhance it? So it's nice to hear, I believe, it's nice to hear Holly's story, because she was a trained veterinarian, and our heads would think otherwise, but as you heard, they're taught very, very, very little about nutrition, which is also why most traditional veterinarians, when you go to them, they don't know how to tell you about nutrition. So they often just do what they were taught and say, here, you know, take this national brand and you'll be fine. And now, as many of you know, there's all these prescription diets that have come on the market, another clever move on behalf of the pet food industry. And not that they're completely bad, but they're often not very nutritionally balanced. And so the vets think they're doing a good thing by saying, take this food for kidneys and just feed them this. But they're forgetting about, what about vitamins and minerals and perhaps some things that are lacking from that? So just like with us as humans, you know, a friend of mine said to me one day, I'm really frustrated. I wish I could find a holistic vet that does chiropractic, acupuncture, nutritional knowledge, and traditional veterinary care. And then she started laughing, and she's a massage therapist, and she started laughing and said, why on earth would I think I could find that in one person? I can't find that in one person for me. I go to an acupuncturist, I go to a chiropractor, I get massages, I have a traditional doctor, and I have a holistic doctor. So remember, sometimes it does mean we have to have a team effort. But in the world of veterinary care, I highly recommend that you either access a local holistically minded veterinarian, and they're going to vary with how much they can offer you in regards to different services. And for those that are out of town, it's even good to know that some veterinarians are available by telephone for consultations. I mean, they're not going to be able to diagnose diseases, et cetera, but they can often help you once a diagnosis has happened. Okay, and then I just wanted to mention, from my perspective as an animal communicator, I hear the animals all the time begging for more, so to speak. It's a very, very common topic that I hear animals bringing up, and that is food. And they don't want to offend their people because they believe their people love them very much. However, they're really, really needing more. So in thinking about this, I was thinking, you know, many times we have a concept based on what the animals are demonstrating to us. And is it a true concept or a false concept? Or perhaps is it both? An example of this would be, I just did a consult last week with a client of mine who rescued a dog about a year ago, and we did a couple consults a year ago when she was helping him. He was very scared and had come from a traumatic situation. And so I hadn't talked to her in a year, and we were talking, and she says, well, you know, he's really not into food that much. He just, sometimes he doesn't eat for a few days, 3, 4, 5 days, and then he'll eat. So I figure he'll eat when he's ready. And when I hear something like that, I want to gasp, but I don't, because an animal needs to eat. And it's not that an animal doesn't want to eat. It's that an animal doesn't often like what they're being fed, or it doesn't feel right for their body, or it could be anything. They could have a bad tooth, and they don't want to chew food. I mean, it can be, of course, a variety of things, but if we're just looking at food and food intake, for an animal, for a dog especially, to not eat for a few days and just walk away from food is not healthy, first of all, and not normal, second of all. So don't let yourselves be tricked into thinking, well, he'll eat when he wants to eat. Because she's a good person and she meant well. She just thought she was letting him do what he wanted to do. It didn't even dawn on her to take that dry food that was full of chemicals and change it to something better and offer him a better diet. And I can't wait to talk to her next time and see what it's like to hear her say, oh my gosh, he loves food. Another true or false kind of statement would be, well, my dog throws up a lot, but the reason he throws up is because he eats way too fast. And when I tell people that they might be vomiting for other reasons, I tune into the dog and I'll find out, well, my food's full of chemicals and then it burns my throat and then it burns my stomach when it goes in there. It's got chemicals, it's got dyes, it's got contaminants in it. And so a lot of times it's like it accumulates day after day, and I believe they're probably slightly ulcerated, the tissue inside, and from all the chemicals and dyes and such. And so the body is naturally trying to reject what is being offered and being put in. It's not because they're eating too fast that it rejects it, which it could be that case sometimes, but often it's because the body is saying, please don't send this in here. We can't deal with this anymore. It's got too much stuff in it that is harming us. And so the dog will happily eat their food and then might walk away and throw up in 10 minutes or 2 hours, and the body is saying, no, we're not going to do this. So vomiting is not normal and is often a sign of the wrong foods going in. Another true or false kind of statement that I get from clients is, well, he's just really picky because he wags his tail, he gets really excited when I'm preparing his food, you know, in the kitchen, I'm getting it out of the cupboard, scooping it out of the bag, and I put it into his dog food and he walks up and then just walks away. I mean, I put it into his dog bowl, sorry, walks up and just walks away. And so the client will say, so he's just picky. No, the dog's enthusiastic about, oh boy, it's time for nutrition to come in, walks up to the bowl and says, oh please, not that. Really? Is that really what you're giving me? Again? And so often when they do that, they're trying to show us, I really don't like that food. Or they could be loving the food and need something new for a change. Holly's going to talk to you about that, you know, a little bit about variety and why variety is important. So sometimes you may have a dog that eats their food fine and then starts walking away from it because it's their only way of showing us, I think I'm kind of done with that food for a while. Could I have something different or could we enhance it? And then another true or false kind of statement is, well, my dog is a real beggar. They watch me at the kitchen table or I'll start to cook dinner and they come in and they're a beggar. And so I talk to the dog, and the dog says, I'm not a beggar. I'm just hankering for some food. I want real food. They give me, you know, a cheap dry food, and they think it's great because it sits in a bowl all day for me, and they think, there you go, you know, Fluffy, you've got your food, and I love you so much. It's a full bowl. It's got lots of food in it. And Fluffy is looking at the, you know, fry pan with the chicken in it going, I could use some meat, please. So often they're not beggars. They are having cravings, and they often know, or their higher self knows, what their body is needing. So truly try and tune into, are they beggars, and just watching every mouthful you eat, and often we create those beggars by feeding them from the table or whatever, or perhaps are they trying to show you, you know, I really need some of that kind of nutrient also. And then the last one I want to share is true or false kind of statement is when a client says, well, she loves her food because she eats it really fast. She loves it so much she eats it really fast and it's gone. And often eating the food really fast is, oh my God, I'm feeling like I need nutrients. Please get it in fast. And they take it in fast and then their body says, bummer, bummer, man. This has not got the nutrients we're needing. So sometimes when a dog gobbles up their food really fast, yes, it can be a habit. Yes, it can be due to their past when maybe they were starving or they had to compete for their food. But also it can be because they're really wanting to get something in. I know that for myself, if I'm really hungry and it's been a while and I finally, you know, get some food on the table, or the other night I was out and I did a consult after several in the day, and for those of you that do animal communication, you know that you kind of bonk with your energy level, and so I stopped and got a burrito. I thought, I'm not making any food when I get home. I got to have something now. And I stood at the kitchen counter and took a few bites before I fed my animals because I just needed to get grounded. So I know that feeling of, I got to get some food in there. And so often they are feeling like, I got to get some food in there. And they're trying to, somebody's pushing a button here. And they're trying to get the nutrients in. It's got an urgency to it. So where do you begin with all of this? And it is truly a beginning for many of you, or you might be complementing what you're doing. And Holly is now going to say to us, what can we do and what are some basic ways to make it easy, get it started, get it going?
So, you know, the first thing I think of is what would dogs eat normally? If we weren't around, what would they eat? I'm in Colorado, and we don't have really wolves here at this point. We have a lot of coyotes, a lot of foxes, and if you go hiking and you look around, look at their poop sometimes and see what's in their poop. There's, you'll see little tiny bones sometimes. You'll see, like, skins from things like apples and tubers. You see a lot of seeds from berries and things that they've eaten. So they eat. Dogs are classed as carnivores, but they're actually kind of hunter-gatherer type carnivores, or some people say scavenger carnivores, where they will hunt. You always hear, you know, they hunt everything from mice and lizards and insects up to like deer and caribou and moose and bison and big animals. But they eat a lot of smaller rodents, insects, rabbits, smaller animals as well. And when they eat those, they tend to eat them whole. So they eat the guts, they eat the heart, they eat the kidneys. If they leave anything, if you ever see a carcass that coyotes, or if you're lucky enough to be around where wolves are, they'll eat kind of from the inside out. They start on the belly. Most of the internal organs are gone. You'll see what's left are the feet, maybe a little bit of the backbone, and the hide and fur. And then when you think about what these little animals are eating, the little rodents eat a fair amount of grain. The bigger herbivores eat a lot of grasses and leaves. So when the carnivores are eating the internal organs, they're eating a little bit of greens. They're eating a little bit of grains. So a little bit of the green leaf and grass and a little bit of the grain that has some digestive juices or pre-digestive juices. They're also eating muscle meat. Which is what we think, when we eat meat, we're eating muscle meat, whether it's a hamburger, a steak, or a chicken breast, or a chicken thigh. That's all the meat, the flesh, muscle part. And they eat bones, and they eat tendons. So they eat some of that fresh stuff. So when you're looking at your dogs, what they're going to eat is a lot of meat, some organ meat or organs, some veggies, some fruits, a little bit of grain that's kind of pre-digested, but they don't eat flour. They certainly don't eat bleached flour or refined flour. They're probably not going to eat a lot of corn and wheat. They'll eat a little bit of grain. So if you're trying to get to what your dog would normally eat, kind of keep that in the back of your mind. The main part of what they're going to eat is most likely going to be meat of some kind. So if you're going to the grocery store or you're specialty pet food store and you're looking at food, the first thing you look at is the name on the bag or the can. If the name is blank dog food or blank food for dogs, chicken dog food, liver dog food, beef food for dogs, those must have 95% of that ingredient. So if it says chicken dog food, 95% of what's in it must be chicken. If it says beef and liver food for dogs, 95% of what's in it must be a combination of beef and liver. So when you actually start looking at food, you'll see that you don't see that a lot on a lot of bags. You don't see a lot of chicken dog food, beef dog food, salmon food for dogs. Most of what you see will have something on it that's what you call a qualifying descriptor. So it would say beef dinner for dogs, or beef stew, or dog food casserole of beef, chunks, entree, nuggets, formula, dinner, any of those things. Those 25% of the food must be that meat. So if it says chicken formula, chicken dinner, beefy bites, or actually I should say beef bites, beef stew, beef entree, kidney and liver entree, 25% of that food is that meat source. So when you look at dog food, you'll find a lot more of them say that. When you get down to foods that say dog food with lamb, dog food made with chicken, those only have to have 3% of that meat in them. So try to avoid foods
that have that width or flavor. Its flavor doesn't even have to have any of the meat in it. It can have a completely artificial flavor. So just looking at the label will give you some clues as to what's in it. The next thing you need to do is look at the ingredient list. You want to have some kind of a meat byproduct, meat meal, or meat would be the best, listed in the top three ingredients. Just like when you are looking to see what's in food for you, ingredients in dog food must be listed from the biggest percentage of the ingredient in that food to the least. So they're in decreasing order. When you pick up, if you pick up a dog food and the first ingredient is wheat flour, that's the biggest ingredient in that food. Now, occasionally you'll get a food that will have duck and chicken and buffalo and something else in it, and you might have whole barley or something as a first ingredient because you have this combination of other meats, and the combination of meats would make a percentage, but generally not. Generally, you want to look for, in the first three to five ingredients, you want a meat ingredient when you're looking at it. Meat, if it says it has chicken, beef, buffalo, salmon in it, that is the muscle meat of that animal. So that's what you're looking for when it actually has that in it. If it says byproducts, that basically is parts other than that skeletal muscle meat. So it could be heads, feet, internal organs. Byproducts are not necessarily bad, because when you think about when a wild carnivore eats an animal, they eat byproducts. They eat the feet, they eat the head, they eat the internal organs. But you don't want a lot of them in there, because when you look at the percentage of those non-muscle meat parts to the percentage of muscle meat on an animal that a carnivore is going to eat, they're relatively small. Byproducts also can be less than human quality, shall we say. So I'm a little cautious. Some byproducts are fine. I wouldn't rule out food because it has byproducts, but they shouldn't be up in a really, in the very beginning of the ingredients where there are a huge amount of the ingredients. The next thing you'll see sometimes for meat is you'll see meals. It may say lamb meal or chicken meal. When they talk about meal, meal is made from animal products by slow boiling. It's called rendering. We hate to use the word rendering because many people associate rendering with ill animals or unhealthy animals, but you can also render perfectly healthy animals. It's a way of processing the food. Generally, if you see meat meal or meat and bone meal or byproduct meal, those are cues that that probably is not the best food to get. So again, meat meal, meat and bone meal, or byproduct meal are kind of cues. Often those are things that they're very nonspecific terms. Often those are animal products that are gotten from a slaughterhouse as kind of waste products. So the quality can really vary in those. If it says lamb meal, chicken meal, beef meal, has a specific animal source for that meal, quite often those are animals that were produced just for putting into that dog food, and they are good quality. So that's kind of a cue you have to remember. Meal is not the important word, but it should have chicken meal, lamb meal, fish meal. Even preferential to fish meal would be herring meal, mackerel meal, salmon meal, because what that means is they got a specific animal product that they then slow cooked or slow boiled in order to produce and put into that food. So the general meals, meat meal is not a good term, because like I said, you generally what it means is that dog food manufacturer is buying from slaughterhouses whatever they got left over and slow cooking it. So you really want to have specifically designated by the name of the source animal. And to some degree, you're relying on the dog food company and their reputation and their pride to obtain good quality ingredients. But those are real clues on what you can do. The next thing you'll see on the label you can look for the guaranteed analysis. And this is similar to what you see on human food products, where you look and it tells you how many calories in a serving and how many of those calories are protein and how many grams of fat and all that on it. It's not, the guaranteed analysis on pet foods is not nearly as extensive or as broken down, but it will give you the amount of protein, fat, fiber, minimums. So you can look at that and see, again, animals that we're talking about, the dogs, are carnivores. There should be quite a bit of protein in it because muscle meat, which is the main source of their diet, is very high in protein. So that should be high in there. This is where the melamine controversy came in. For cheap dog foods, the way they measure protein is, in any of these things, is they basically take the dog food or the human food and they burn it, they incinerate it. When you incinerate food, you remove the carbon, the hydrogen, and the oxygen, and it leaves nitrogen. Nitrogen is mainly found in protein. It's not found in carbohydrates, it's not found in fats, and it's not found in liquid or water parts. So when you burn it off and you have nitrogen left, you can look at that scientifically and say, okay, if this product that we burned was a food, and we've eliminated the carbohydrates, the moisture, and the fat, what we should have left is protein. So we look at that nitrogen and say, okay, the nitrogen weighs this much, therefore there was this much protein in it, the protein is this percent. What pet food manufacturers figure out is you could add anything with nitrogen in it, and when you burned it, it would raise your protein in your crude analysis. And that's what melamine, which was the poison that was in the dog foods a year ago last spring, melamine was a cheap source of nitrogen. So they were throwing it into dog foods in order to raise the protein content when you turned and looked at the guaranteed analysis on it. So it was sort of a way to subvert the system. The system only works if you're using foods originally that you burn down and measure the amount of protein. If you're adding fertilizer with nitrogen in it, or ammonia, or urine, or melamine with nitrogen in it, your crude protein comes up higher because you've raised the nitrogen content, but you didn't actually raise the amount of digestible protein. So you need to kind of, when you read the guaranteed analysis, kind of keep that in the back of your mind, that don't forget to read the ingredient list and make sure that there's no odd things in your ingredient list. If you read the ingredient list and there's a bunch of stuff you don't recognize, you probably shouldn't be eating it. I mean, when you read it, you should recognize lamb, you should recognize beef, you should recognize chicken, carrots, barley, tocopherols, if you're not familiar, is a word that's often in there. Tocopherols are related to vitamin E, and they're a type of stabilizer, so those are fine to be in there. But you shouldn't be, you know, reading a lot of things that, I don't know what that is. Hydrogenated, you know, coconut milk from the Philippines, and you're thinking, well, what is hydrogen coconut milk and why is it in there? So kind of read the ingredient list that way. Unless if you don't recognize what it is, it's probably really not a food item on there. So hopefully that made sense just as far as picking a good food and reading a food. Another thing to keep in mind, particularly if you have a dog that has a little trouble digesting, does a little more of the kind of vomiting or bile vomiting in the morning, just seems to be hot in their GI tract, has kind of prone to gingivitis or hot mouth or stinky breath, and their teeth are clean. If they have stinky breath and their teeth are clean, it's probably coming up from their stomach. Lots of belching. Dog foods usually are either what they call extruded, which is a method of high-pressure cooking. That's what makes them so nice and hard and crunchy and keeps their teeth clean. It also makes them incredibly difficult to digest because you have basically, you have pressure-cooked food into these little tiny nuggets that then the body has to break down. And when the body's trying to break that down, it produces a lot of heat in the stomach and in the GI tract. So I generally, if given a choice, if the ingredients are the same between two brands, I generally will go with an oven-baked or a baked formula rather than an extruded formula, just because the baked formulas are a little easier to digest. It's not as compact and dense
as the extruded or pressure-cooked forms of dry food. So just the way, once you've got your ingredients, the way that they're cooked can also make a difference. So having all that done, you're thinking, okay, but I still need to feed dog food. I'm not comfortable making the recipe. I'm not comfortable. So the easiest thing to do is just to add some fresh food. Just keep the, go with a good dog food, a good brand that you've found. You've read the ingredient list. You've read the guaranteed analysis. You're pretty comfortable with it. But it is still a processed dog food. There's not a lot of variation. So I always figure, hey, if you feed 80% by volume of dog food and 20% of something else, you're not going to get in any vitamin deficiencies, nutritional deficiencies. So this is where your fresh food comes in. If you eat a good diet and you have a good balanced diet and you eat whole grains and fresh fruits and vegetables and good meat, you can actually just pretty much give what's on your plate to your dogs. You want to be a little cautious about really fatty foods. If you have something with a real heavy fatty gravy, maybe don't give them the gravy. Give them the meat and the veggies and a little bit of the fruits. Whole grains, again, I think if their dogs are going to have carbohydrates, give them whole grains. So give them the healthy stuff. Little bits of yogurt are great. Just depending on what's going on with your dog. Some of them really like raw veggies. Most of the time, I recommend that people steam or cook the vegetables somewhat, just because if they were in nature, they will eat some tubers and berries and things on their own, but they also eat greens and things that are partly digested, and cooking is basically partly digesting. So just adding little bits of fresh food. Again, with the whether you want to go raw or cooked, the older animals, the more infirm animals, cooked is always better. Slow boiled is the best way to cook everything. It most closely imitates what's going on in their own GI tracts or what would be going on in the GI tract of a prey animal that they were eating. If they're having trouble digesting food, you can add digestive enzymes. You can get those from a health food store. Dogs' GI tracts are very similar to people's GI tracts, so you can use a human form of enzymes, or you can get, they have specific ones for dogs that sometimes are cheaper to buy through your veterinarian. Dogs that, just like we have to have fiber to be healthy, dogs need to have fiber. So when you think about what are our most fibrous foods, pumpkin, broccoli, carrots, green beans, all of those things you can add in to add a little bit of fiber. Whole grains also are great for fiber. I also have found, and this is just a theory, there's no scientific basis behind it that I know of, but just in practice over the last 5 or 6 years when I've been doing more nutritional consulting, it seems like there are some breed differences. I know in my own household, I've got one field setter and one Bernese Mountain Dog, and the field setter tends to do better when I feed chicken and turkey. She just eats with a little more relish. She just seems to like it better. The Bernese, which their history is they were a dairy dog. So when you think about what were they probably fed traditionally, milk, cheese, and beef, she does a little better when I have beef. Unfortunately for her, beef is more expensive, and we don't have that as much. Clients that have the northern breeds, the Huskies and the Malamutes, they tend to do better with a little more fish in their diet. So you can also look at your breed. Where did they originate? What did they do? You know, if it's an Australian Kelpie that have been in Australia for, well, I guess a couple centuries now, mostly herding sheep, you know, they might do better with mutton than they would with beef or fish. If it's a Basenji that came from a real desert area, fish is probably not the way that they were going. They probably were more around goats and sheep than anything else. So again, you can kind of look at it that way, play with it, see how they do. But I do think that there is a small breed predilection. And I kind of relate it to the way, if you look at Eskimos and Native Americans to North America, that
do not do well with a lot of the grain products are more prone to alcoholism and diabetes when they are switched to a higher grain diet and away from their native diets.
When they're, you introduce a lot of wheat and a lot of refined carbs into them. And I think that some of the dog breeds are similar in their desire for different types of protein and different types of food. Unless I missed anything in there. If you're going to gradually, if you're really going to switch foods, I usually mix them for at least a week when you're switching from one brand to another, or even from one flavor to another. I mix them gradually. And I do, if you find a brand you really like, I switch flavors within that brand, or I'll find two or three brands that I like and kind of switch around. Because if any one brand is missing a micronutrient might be something like copper or zinc, but something we need in our diets that in very small amounts, it'll be higher in the other brand or the other flavor. So you can kind of switch around different flavors. And just add your fresh foods a little bit at a time, just a tablespoon, see how they do, see if they like it or don't like it. I do use quite a bit of just canned pumpkin, or you can just cook up yams or cook up a little winter squash or pumpkin to add fiber to these guys. Fiber is a wonderful thing for constipation. Fiber is a wonderful thing for diarrhea. Fiber is a great thing for dogs with chronic anal gland problems. And pumpkin or baked yam or sweet potato is the easiest way, and almost all dogs will eat it. The one caution with pumpkin is you can't open a can and then leave it in the can. Once it's exposed to air, it will oxidize the metal in the can, and it doesn't really become poisonous, but it starts to taste very metallic, and most dogs don't like it. So if you have a little dog and they're not getting much, I usually put a can of pumpkin, open it, fill an ice cube tray with it, and then freeze the ice cube tray, and you can pop out a cube-sized bit of pumpkin for every day for them. I also like yogurt, any of the natural yogurts that are live culture. Usually I try to go plain because there's no sugar added. Yogurts, especially in the summer, they're very cooling to hot GI tracts, and they have just, you've seen all the commercials now with Activa and Deniva and all of the live culture yogurts. And animals need those live cultures too. So just a teaspoon of a live culture yogurt. If you eat yogurt, just give them a little teaspoon of what you've got as well. Really, really can help with some of their, just kind of maintaining GI health. Did I miss anything, Terry?
No, very good.
Okay.
And I would add to that that just like us, you know, there's nothing like having a partner come home and say, that's it, we're going on a diet, I'm ready to lose weight, we're having salads and veggies and rice for the next month, and we're going to drop weight, and you're sitting there saying, that wasn't my plan, I still like my pizza. So just because you guys are learning today, and just because this is good for the dogs, doesn't mean they're all gung-ho about the changes. Change is hard, even if it's for the better of a being. And so go slowly, because I find that some clients, they get so enthusiastic that they go and change everything all of a sudden, and change is hard physically on them. So do everything gradually, as she is saying. And so what I tend to tell my clients is, if you're already doing a dry food-only diet, even if it's not a good quality dry food, stick to that right now and enhance it and get their digestive tract, as I call it, waking up. Because if they have the same thing going in and day out, exact same ingredients day in and day out, can you imagine what that digestive tract is feeling like? Oh, great, here comes the same stuff. Send most of it on out, especially if it's a poor quality food. So think of it as you're waking up their digestive tract if you start to add some things. And along with waking it up can be responses, such as a loose stool for a little bit. So you don't want to panic, and as Holly says, the pumpkin helps. And what you want to do is just gradually start to add. I mean, with dogs, it's very different than cats. Dogs are usually thrilled to find something new in their bowl. But if you find that that's not the case, then just, you know, don't get discouraged and say, well, I tried that pumpkin, and he just won't eat it. So maybe you can add the pumpkin later once you've got some meat going and you stir it in with the meat and he barely notices it. Because it might just seem weird or odd or unusual or unfamiliar or smell funny. So just remember that they don't like change just like we don't sometimes. And, of course, different personalities of different dogs varies.
I know I have plenty of clients who say, my dog will eat anything, anything that hits the floor, anything I put in their bowl. Great. You have a very willing participant. You can probably shift them over a little bit faster than you can somebody else. But if you have someone that's 8 or 10 years old and they've only ever eaten a medium grade dry food and that's all they've ever had their whole life, go gentle. Go easy. Make it fun. The other thing I remind people is, you know, let it be fun. You know, it doesn't have to be, I got to do this and I got to do it right. And, you know, she said you had to have pumpkin and you had to have a certain amount of meat and you have to have this. Just start adding some stuff real gently and real safely. And there are good resources, you know, out there for that. On, you know, so if you're worried, okay, well, I didn't hear her say anything about spinach, but my backyard's full of spinach. I wonder, could I cook spinach and add the food? Well, you can look it up and find out if spinach is safe. So as you start, you know, thinking outside the box, which is what our goal is for you today, and you start thinking about these things, just let it be fun and just let it be a little bit of research. You know, work with a holistic vet or do some research yourself. Do what feels safe. And now what I want to do is go ahead and shift us a little bit early into questions, because I have a feeling the questions are going to take up more time this time. And so we're going to shift into questions. And again, if you've written anything down, we'll hopefully get to it. First question that was submitted was, what is considered to be safe and healthy as a chew for a puppy or an adult dog, one that they really like? And this person wrote, greenies, even though dogs seem to love them, I don't think they are a good choice. Tendons with a question mark, bully sticks with a question mark, etc. So, Holly, what would you recommend as a safe and healthy chew for dogs?
This is so individual. There is no safe and healthy chew for every dog. You have to really watch them and be aware. My general rule for chewies is, you know, they don't need something every day. It's a treat. It's a goodie. I have given my guys raw beef bones for years. The disadvantage to raw beef bones is that they can fracture their teeth on them. So if you have a dog that just grabs and just chews, and, you know, that might not be the best thing. It might be too hard for them. I have a fair number of clients that use raw meaty bones, and what they use are chicken wings or chicken backs or chicken necks. I think those are great, but you have to have a dog that actually chews them up into little pieces and eats them. If you have the lab that bites it once, hears it cracks, and swallows it, that's not a good thing for them. Most rawhides have some formaldehyde in them, and formaldehyde is toxic in little tiny amounts. If you give your dog a Flippies, one of those little, they're about 4 inches long by an inch and a half wide rawhide strip, once a week, and it's a medium-sized or large dog, I don't think you're going to poison them with formaldehyde. But yeah, if you give them 3 of those a day, that's probably not really a good idea. Sometimes dogs just need things like the real hard, similar to Kongs, I think, now, and there's several brands that have these kind of hard, plasticky things that have nubs on them that keep their teeth clean. So it really varies. Old blue jeans with knots tied in them are great for some dogs. Some dogs just love to work on those knots, and those are nowhere near hard enough to break a tooth or do anything. But be aware, there are some dogs that like to unravel those and pull all the threads off and eat them, which, of course, then creates a linear foreign body and is not a good idea. So the best thing is just to look at a variety of things. Remember, it's a treat. So don't give it all the time, because it's really not healthy. You know, you're allowed to have ice cream occasionally, or a Twinkie, or whatever you want to eat, a cookie. But don't make it a main part of your diet. And just be aware when they're chewing it, you don't want them to swallow a 6-inch-long piece of rawhide. If they have rawhides and chew off little quarter-inch pieces and swallow them, that's great. So the main thing with the chewies is to really stay with the animals while they're chewing them, watch them, see what they're doing, and make sure you have an appropriate chew item for that animal.
And how do you feel about tendons? Because those are real big now in these specialty pet food stores. Tendons are safe for them?
Tendons are safe as long as they don't swallow a 4 or 6-inch piece of them.
Right. Same thing with the bully sticks?
Same thing with the bully sticks.
Okay.
Bully sticks actually are bull penises. So, I mean, they're a perfectly normal thing for them to eat. They've just been dried.
Mm-hmm.
Be a little aware. Some of the bully sticks I've seen have been really smoked heavily with a smoky flavor, and that seems to be a little rich or greasy.
Mm-hmm.
for some animals. The same with the pig ears. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a treat. It's a really fatty, greasy, smoky thing. You want to give them a pig ear once a month? Fine. Don't give them a pig ear every day.
And greenies?
Greenies, it's just, you know, greenies I'm not really fond of because greenies basically are gluten.
Okay.
That's what makes them all goop together. But again, if you want to give them a greenie every 3 or 4 weeks, there's nothing in there that's really that horrible. Do be cautious about them biting off an inch square piece of greenie and swallowing it because
right.
it's not very digestible.
And that is a real important thing, and I would just add to you guys that, you know, sometimes we want to give our dogs something when we leave for the day so they're not bored, and that's one thing. But when they're these kind of chews, it is real important to supervise, and it can be quality time where you just hang out and watch. I know for myself, Jake and Shiloh were what I call chomp-chomp swallowers. They would have a greenie broken in about 2 pieces, and it would be gone down the hatch, so not an option for my kids. And bully sticks, I used to get them extra long, so they really had to work on them, and I would supervise them and take them away after about an hour. It's also a good idea to not leave a lot of their treats or bones or whatever. Sometimes people say, well, he's got tons of bones in the backyard that I've been giving him for the last several months. Not a good idea. They can get bacteria. They can get bugs on them. They also can get extremely aggressive if anybody comes to visit them, especially another dog, because that is their turf and those are their bones. So these things should be taken away and tossed out. For myself, with the bully sticks, I found that their bellies did really well with them. I found that they would chew them slowly if it was a big enough thing. It cleaned their teeth really well. But I would always watch, and if it got down to about 3 inches, it was done. And sometimes there was a little argument saying, no, I am taking it now. And I had to be boss and say, not an option, because they could swallow that, you know, the rest of that in one swallow, big dogs. And then I have some clients who have dogs that are smaller or medium-sized or whatever, and they chew on their greenies real slowly, and they turn their head sideways, and they gnaw on it, and it is moving around their gums, and they say, oh, a greenie will last like a month. Oh, great. Well, then that's very different if you're keeping it clean and it's fine, and you pick it up and take it back and offer it again. So as she's saying, individuality is really important to pay attention to. Okay, and I just
and then if I could say, Terry, I don't worry so much about stuff laying in a yard getting dirty. I think that we're supposed to be exposed to bugs and germs and junk.
Okay.
But I worry more about when it sits out there. If you've got a bone that's been out there for 6 or 8 months, it does get softer. And I worry more about them breaking off a piece and swallowing it and causing a foreign body.
Okay, good.
So I also kind of tend to monitor and pick up.
And I want to share one little story on this just to leave you guys with a visual on how important supervising is. I had a client once who gave her dog, loves her dog very much, gives him a rawhide every single night because he's such a good boy and he loves it so much. And one day he stopped eating. She called me and said, can you tune in? I said, whoa, he's got serious, serious pain in his gut. I'd get him to the vet right away. He hadn't eaten in like a day and a half, which was unusual for him. They had to do an emergency surgery, and the vet found 49 undigested rawhides in this dog's belly. So he was probably a chomp chomp swallower, and she wasn't supervising and she didn't know any better, and so they are very difficult to digest. And the natural pet supply stores and the natural pet catalogs do have lots of healthier options. Okay, so the next question is, can you give dogs bones to help with their teeth? And we're kind of overlapping on this. Or more importantly, what things or foods can you give them to help with teeth?
And I think we covered the bones pretty well on supervision, and the, you know, you can always brush their teeth. I admit I'm a horrible mom because I don't brush my dog's teeth.
I never brush my dog's teeth either. But I did about once every couple of months. I did have a dental tool, and I would scrape the plaque.
Yeah, and scrape them. There are a couple of products, and you can ask your vet about them. One is called Plaque Off. And it's actually made from kelp and seaweed. I really like it for a couple reasons. One is it's got some iodine in it. And a lot of people and a lot of dogs, I think, tend to become iodine deficient, which can lead to a borderline hypothyroid condition. So you can kind of bump the iodine in it. And I have been amazed. I was just sent this as a product that they sent me a sample, and I thought, well, I'll use it on my dogs because my one teeth don't line up very well, and she gets a lot of crud on her teeth, and I am amazed at how it does really keep a lot of the plaque off, and it's just seaweed. It's just dried seaweed. It's a pretty healthy product, so I have been real impressed with that one. And then there's another, Pets Life, P-E-T-Z-L-I-F-E, has an oral care line that they have a spray, and they also have kind of a gel that you have to rub on the teeth. And I haven't used those as much, partly because just a lot of owners, myself being one, a lot of animals don't really like that whole why are you in my mouth thing. And you do actually, while it tastes, they've flavored it salmon, and I've actually tasted it, and it does taste like fish oil. Again, it involves putting your finger in their mouth and running it around, which a lot of animals tolerate, but very few really like. And the plaque off, you can just, I've had two animals out of over 100 that have kind of said, I'm not sure I really want to eat that. But you just throw it in their bowl and they eat it. So those would, as far as products, those would be the two lines that I really like the best.
And I want to add to that that, because I know a lot of my clients have traditional vets and perhaps haven't found a holistic vet yet, and a traditional vet's probably not going to have any clue what Plaqueoff is. And you can order it directly from the Internet, from them. It's not a medicine or anything. And I believe the website is still international-dental.com. And I'm concerned about, I think they promote it for dogs and cats, and I'm concerned because it's got the iodine, and cats tend to become hyperthyroid, and iodine can rev up, that I've stopped telling people to offer it to cats.
I use it in cats a lot, but not if they are hyperthyroid.
Yeah, I had my kitties on it, and my 7-year-old kitty started getting borderline hyperthyroid.
And take them off. And,
so I took her off of it, and I took her off of any ingredient that has kelp in it, any food that has kelp as an ingredient. Yeah.
I do monitor the kitties.
Yeah.
So just in case, for
many of you, you have dogs and cats, if you see that, you know, just think about that for if you plan on offering it to both. Okay, and the next question that was submitted is regarding controlling a dog's weight. It's easy to control a dog's weight with dry food, is a one philosophy. This is what's stated here, because you can control the quantity. It's easier to control for the quantity. And in particular, this example was, you know, if you have a dog that's had a surgery or has, you know, physical limitations, and of course it's drilled into you by the vet, which is very important, you've got to control this dog's weight, otherwise they're going to have a much harder time getting around. So portion control is a lot easier, it's believed, by some, with dry food. So what would your comment be to that?
My gut reaction is, you know, you measure it. It doesn't matter whether it's canned, wet, homemade, dry. You measure it and put it in the bowl. If an individual finds it easier to measure dry food, that's great. Use dry and measure it. Try to use a good dry. My favorite weight loss, and I have had better luck with this, when I was in general practice, there are a lot of weight loss or low-cal diets out there, and I found that most of them, they may have gotten the weight off, but they kind of produced almost a sluggish attitude in the animal. I don't know how to explain it other than there was just an emotional feeling of, it's the way I feel when I go to the Midwest to visit my in-laws every year, and we eat a lot of fried foods and sit around and talk. You just almost, it's like, oh, God, we've crossed into Missouri. I just put on 5 pounds. And you just feel sluggish and slow. And to me, a lot of the weight loss diets, the feel I get from animals that are on them, even if they've lost the weight, is this kind of sluggish, slow, my metabolism is slowing down, I'm moving through jello. And I would much prefer, if they're already on dry food, to control weight, I just reduce the dry food by a quarter to a third of the amount. So if you're feeding a cup of dry food, I feed two-thirds to three-quarters cup of dry food, and then make up the additional volume in cooked green beans. And occasionally you'll find animals that don't like cooked green beans, and I'll say, well, then go with cooked pumpkin or cooked broccoli or cooked carrots. But something that's fresher, that has a little more vitality in it than just a kibble food, a dry food that's got more fiber in it, because, again, fiber can just be like almost sawdust. So get a vegetable that has a lot of fiber and not a lot of calories and substitute, and you can still measure. you know, you've got that same volume that you're putting in, but put in some of that cooked vegetable. And I've had better luck, and people often say, well, not only is he losing weight, but he's like perkier. He just must feel so much better with those 2 pounds off. And I honestly think that the vitality of the vegetables, the fresh or frozen vegetables, really makes a difference to the metabolic rate and what's going, their energy level, as well as getting the weight off.
And also to remember that depending on the dry food that you're using, and especially, I just believe people should stay away from diet dry foods, because what they're doing is putting a lot of filler in there, and the dogs end up feeling like they're starving. And you're better off doing a high-quality, controlled quantity than to do some of these diet foods on the market. That's how, you know, think about how you feel if you go onto a diet that somebody tells you you really ought to do. You're constantly wanting something else, and that's your body wanting the nutrients. So remember, protein is a good thing for dogs to have. So you're better off cutting back a little bit of the dry and giving them some chopped up pieces of chicken or something that gives taste bud extravaganza, you know, with the green beans, and it's high in protein, so it's not going to be high in fat. So I would recommend stay away from any diet foods, where they call them diet foods, and watch the portion control. And remember, quality of life for the dog, so that because a lot of times, yes, we need to get the weight off of them, but they get really edgy, they get really anxious. I just worked with 2 dogs yesterday, and the woman is very adamant about controlling their food, so they get a cup of dry, and that is it. And she has 2 really wound up because of their breeds, an Aussie and a Border Collie, and they spend a lot of time in crates. You know, just wound them up even tighter, and then they have this food that's not very high quality, and they don't get any real meat, and they don't get anything that grounds them. So she wonders why her dogs don't listen and why they run away from her, and, you know, why they're out of control. So food is very important for getting your dogs grounded. And I know I've heard a lot from people who say, I barely feed my dog hardly any food, and he's so overweight. That's because he's nutritionally starved. So don't fall into the, well, give them just a limited amount, because just like humans, a human can say the same thing. You know, I don't eat very much. I skip breakfast, I eat a little bit of lunch, and then I eat a healthy dinner, but I'm not dropping my weight. And that is because often the physical body can think, oops, we might be starving here. We're not getting very much quantity in, and it's not very regular, and it's not very nutritionally based, so we better hold on to the fat storage just in case. So it's very hard for a body to let go of the fat. So often people will have dogs that are on barely any food at all, thinking they're trying to get their weight down, when actually what they need is a nutritionally balanced diet so their body can go, ah, and then let go of the fat. That's right.
See, yeah, if you kind of think of, there were a bunch of these, there were a bunch of these diets. There were weight loss diets. There was a South Beach diet, some different things that basically you could have all the meat and cheese and dairy you wanted, mm-hmm. and all the vegetables you wanted, mm-hmm. and you had very little fruit and very little carbs, and the carbohydrates you had to be whole grains.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that they're very effective is because of the balance of foods. You could eat actually as many calories as you had been eating previously, but you weren't eating the simple refined carb calories. You were eating calories that were associated with proteins and vitamins and minerals and all these good things. So you can think of the same thing with your pets. You can give them protein, you can give them vegetables. Just watch the carbs and the filler, which is what is high in a lot of the diet foods.
Okay, and now I'm going to open it up. We have a little more time here, so if there's somebody that has a question, I'm just going to take whichever one comes through. You need to push your *6 button if you muted yourself that way. And just say who's speaking, if you would.
Hi, this is Della.
Hi, Della.
Holly, I have a question about, I've fed raw and home-cooked diets for years, and I've used commercial vitamin supplements. And when I was formulating these diets for my cats, I had a spreadsheet, and I did a bunch of research from the National Research Council to look at, well, what kind of supplements, what kind of vitamins and minerals does an animal really need? And I was wondering if you had any suggestions. I haven't done that for the dogs. I was wondering if you had any suggestions as to a good source for that information, or a vitamin mineral supplement, or a couple of them that you might recommend.
A good source, actually, Kate Solistes book. Is it Holistic Animal Handbook?
Uh-huh.
Mary, do you know that has
yeah.
the recipes in it? Okay, I kind of forget
so.
Which book has what in it.
Mm-hmm.
But Kate Celisti dash Madeline.
Yeah.
So it's Solisti dash Matteln, I believe.
That's
yeah.
right. Right.
And it's the Holistic Animal Handbook, and she has kind of basic recipes in there, and she has balancing powders for
okay.
for the vitamins and minerals. If you're using a lot of fresh foods, usually you're okay with the vitamins. It's the minerals that you have to watch, because muscle meat is high in magnesium and phosphorus and low in calcium.
Right.
And so you generally need to add calcium unless you're feeding. You're lucky and you have one of these animals that actually will chew up the small bones and eat them rather than just swallow them whole.
Uh-huh.
You need to balance it. But she's got some good stuff in there. That, off the top of my head, is probably the easiest
okay.
source that offers complete diet.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Stella. Another question?
Hi, this is Bev.
Hi, Bev. Mm-hmm.
Yes. What about the, you know, with the large dogs and potential hip problems and those sorts of things? Would you do any of the glucosamine supplements and that type, joint response, things like that?
I do. I actually start, unfortunately for me, sometimes I have 90% of my practice or 95% is geriatrics,
mm-hmm.
but I do occasionally have families that are either getting another dog or have a younger dog that I'm seeing, the older one. And I actually, with my bigger dogs, and even my setter, who's only 50 pounds because she just ran so hard and pounded herself, I start glucosamine when they're puppies. There's nothing in glucosamine that's toxic. There are actually products in glucosamine that are parts of the glycosaminoglycans that are really good for the GI tract and the lining of the bladder as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're inexpensive. I have, my favorite brand is actually GlycoFlex, which is a veterinary brand that's made from green-lipped mussels.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than be a chemically produced glucosamine, it is a... It's kind of like when you get your vitamin C that's got all of the, from rose hips, that has all the adjuncts to it. The glucosamine from the green-lipped mussels, I always think of as more of a complete whole food than maybe a glucosamine that you'd buy at Sam's Club or Walgreens. It's just a glucosamine. But
and
I
a lot of, oh, sorry, I was just going to add, a lot of dogs have a hard time with the kind that you get from a tablet or a pill or whatever in that form, and they don't with the... GlycoFlex and some of the other natural ones, because it can upset their digestive tract.
Where do you find that?
Pardon me?
Where do you find it?
The GlycoFlex, ask your vet for it. If they don't have it, you could probably go online. It's GlycoFlex. I think it's dash FLEX. There may or may not be a dash in it. And see if it shows up.
Great.
But most big veterinary supply houses anymore, used to be hard to find anymore, most big veterinary supply houses carry it. So if your vet doesn't carry it, they should be able to order it through their regular veterinary supply that they get their syringes and everything else from.
Oh, good. And
so,
remember, a lot of veterinarians are on a learning pathway. So sometimes, as Holly said, she started to learn a little bit just by watching some of her clients and what they had learned and what they were doing for their animals and how their health was improving. So sometimes it's okay for us to go to a traditional vet and say, I've learned about this product. You can say, I learned about it through a veterinarian. I'd really like to access it. I hear it's good. They order it for you. They see the difference in your animal. And then before they know it, they're finding they're just naturally recommending it to several of their clients. So we are helping them in many ways, if they don't get offended or upset, by offering some of the wisdom that you do learn and helping them know what products to carry. So on that note, we are going to wrap up here, and I just want to thank Holly very, very much. I know we could go on and on with questions, but the good news is, I believe, Holly, are you a phone call away if they want to schedule perhaps a nutrition guidance consultation?
I am. I'm going to do nutrition by the phone, or if you're in the Denver area, I can even do homemade diets specifically tailored to your animal, but I do need to see them and do an exam for that. And my number is 303-456-4136 to just schedule either an in-home visit or a on-the-phone general consult.
Perfect. And thank you, all of you, for being open to learning and for loving your animals so much, and especially today your doggies, to keep them as healthy and as happy as possible. And I want to remind you that next month's talk is on September 13th. And again, if you can't attend live, please don't hesitate to register, and I'll get the information off for you to listen to it within the first month. We are going to have another wonderful guest speaker, Dr. Laura DeLoach, and she is going to help with enhancing cat nutrition for better health. So fortunately, many of us have more species in our homes, and if you have kitty cats too and you want to learn, which is can be very different information, some overlaps and some is very different. So would welcome you to join that, and just want to thank you again, Holly, and thank all of you, and have a wonderful